I'd like to welcome Lomphopasanu all the way from Abayagiri. It is 23rd of August, Friday for him. It's 24th of August here, Saturday for many of us here in Asia, in Australasia, New Zealand, and Australia. So we are very heartened by the presence of Lompho here with us. Together, let us all pay respects to Lompho with three bows. First bow. Second. And the we shall begin the session by inviting Lompho Pasano to lead us in a short guided meditation, Lompho. Whenever you're ready.
Okay, just to invite everyone to sit comfortably. However, whatever is comfortable for you, sitting cross-legged, sitting in a chair, sitting in some space that you're comfortable and familiar with for meditation. So just to take the opportunity to allow the mind to settle and to become still. It's not about forcing the mind to become still. It's a re I think one of the things is actually recognizing the stillness that is already there. This is something that Lompa Cha would emphasize, in that is like the nature of the mind is that the mind is already tranquil, but it's out of that tranquility that our moods and our proliferations and our various complications arise. And so just to be able to allow that mind to return to awareness, return to knowing, and return to its natural tranquility that's already there. This is an opportunity to experience this stillness, rather, because oftentimes we get tangled up with fighting the mind, trying to stop thinking, trying to force the mind to be still or to force it to be silent, and we add layers of complication that aren't really necessary. There's a simplicity to this direct knowing, being the one who knows, being the Buddho. On the in-breath, on the out-breath, keeping that simplicity of the practice, the training, so that we're able to to experience a sense of settling. And so just to be able to pay attention to that quality of settling. It's not far away from us, it's not distant, it's not something that we need to push ourselves into so much as be willing to recognize it. Be willing to attend to this overlooked quality of the mind. And so to just taking this opportunity, come back into the mindfulness of the body. It's important to ground awareness and ground attention in the experience of the body. I mean, we're so prone to be going up into our our thoughts, our thinking. And the body is always in the present moment. So just to come back to that experience of the body, relaxing the posture. There's an alertness to the posture that is that we want to be fostering. We don't want to slump or be too tense and tight, but just to be alert and present. And the paying attention to the sensation of the breath and relaxing around the breath, but staying with the knowing as the breath comes in. Just be with that, be with the knowing. As the breath goes out, just to be with the knowing. That kind of that soft sensation of the breath, the experience of the body breathing naturally, not forcing the rhythm of the breath, not trying to make it long, not trying to make it short, but just attending to it as it is. So we can take this opportunity to just sit quietly for 15, 20 minutes, give yourself, it's like a giving this gift of tranquility and peace to oneself. Again, it's that sense of you can be really happy about giving a giving gifts to other people in other situations, and oftentimes we overlook giving that gift and being generous to ourselves. And so just giving that gift of tranquility by being mindful, being aware, being with the knowing.
Thank you, Lampung.
Good evening, Lompo, and greetings to everyone. We would now like to request for the Dhamma. The Brahma god Sahampati, Lord of the world, with palms joined in reverence, requested a favor. Beings are here with but little dust in their eyes. Pray, teach the Dhamma out of compassion for them. Brahmacaloka Dipati Sahampati Katanjaliyan Diwarangayajata Satta Parajakajatika Desedudama Anukampi
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang So welcome everyone. Very happy to have the opportunity to be here with you, albeit virtually. It's a great means by which we can connect across across continents, and it's a wonderful thing that your group, the Singapore group, is doing organizing a whole 3 month Dhamma Fest and inviting various teachers from our communities to particularly the Ajahn Chah community to help share Dhamma with you all. So just to acknowledge that it's a great great gift that's being done. A few days ago, I contacted Beta and asked if there was any particular theme that might be useful in a sense that people have been doubting about, talking about, or concerned about, and there were a few very good suggestions, but the one that that I will try to address today is a theme on Nibbana, and it's a very good question in the sense of is it a reality or just a lofty goal? In that it's is this something real, tangible, or is it just some religious gobbledygook that doesn't mean anything in our lives or mean anything to us? Well, of course, the Buddha. Of course, I come in the camp of this is extremely important to pay attention to and to recognize it as a something which is realizable, and that it's not something ethereal. And this is something that the Dhamma of the Buddhas is all of it is really concerned with the. Yeah, to be experienced, each wise person for themselves. This is not, it's not distant. It's a here and now, truth, that can be experienced. And I think that's it's one of the things with, concerning Nibbana. I mean, of course, there are. Descriptions and ways of teaching it that make it extremely remote, extremely philosophical, extremely boring, and I think that that's something that the Buddha, and certainly Ajahn Chah didn't approach it in that way. For Ajahn Chah, this is a this is an experienceable truth that has the power to liberate and free us from all dukkha. And that's actually when the Buddha the most common description or definition that the Buddha gives is it goes along two different camps or different threads. As one is freedom from suffering, so that the experience of the liberation from suffering, from dukkha, from discontent, dissatisfaction, dis-ease, from stress, so that and this is the content of the experience, and then also as a as an ending or extinguishing or freedom from greed, hatred, delusion, the things that taint the mind, taint the heart. So this is again, it's not talking about a place or a level of being. This is an experience. I can remember when I was this is met a long time ago. I was a young abbot of Wat Nanachat. I can't remember. I don't remember. I remember feeling not very senior when Lumpudun Atulo, great disciple of Ajahn Mun, came to visit Wat Nanachat, and he had a group of his lay people with him, and they asked for a Dhamma talk from me. And I felt extremely awkward getting up onto a Dhamma seat and with somebody like Lumpudun sitting there in the background. And I did my duty, gave a talk, and at the end I opened it up for questions, and one of the questions was what is Nibbana like? And I immediately answered, Nibbana is not like anything, and just left it like that, and answered back and forth and whatnot, and I did my duty, and then went back to pay respects to Lumpudun. And Lumpudun, I felt really happy that Lumpudun sort of said, your answer to the question about Nibbana was right, spot on. So yeah, it's not like anything. We try to define it, imagine it, concretize it, make it into a something that we can hold on to, but it's freedom from greed, hatred, delusion. It's freedom from suffering, and so that to be, what would that experience be like? And then the mind goes blank, doesn't it? And then it starts to try to conceive of something. But the first response is actually probably the best response in the heart, is that, oh, the mind just stops. How do you conceive of something that is completely say unimaginable, which is one of the thing, aspects of Nibbana. But it is experienceable. This is the most important thing. Is this is and the I mean, one of the things that came to mind, I'll talk a little bit about Nibbana, and then I thought, I'm going to tangle myself up. I'll just refer you to a book that Ajahn Amaro and I wrote a book called The Island. And if anybody's interested in pursuing this idea, because we wanted to try to present Nibbana as something practical, something that people you could get a feel for, and one that it's practical, that it's realizable. And the Buddha, because sometimes we say, oh, the Buddha never talked about Nibbana. Well, he talked a lot about Nibbana, because it was the purpose of his teaching was to give this path to liberation and to freedom. So he did talk about it a lot, but he also kind of refused to define it too much. There is a in the Sutta Nibbata, there's a very lovely quote where a Brahmin Kappa is asks about the goal or the purpose of and the Buddha says there is an island which you cannot go beyond. It is a place of no thingness, a place of non-possession and of non-attachment. It is the total end of death and decay, and this is why I call it Nibbana, the extinguished or the cool. And this is a translation by Dr. Sadatisa, who is an eminent Sri Lankan scholar who passed away many years ago. Again, even the Buddha trying to describe it, it's sort of like, well, what the heck is that? But it is important to say this is it's all about non-possession, non-attachment, non-clinging. This is a there where it's not a thing that you can possess or hold on to. So it's allowing the mind to let go, allowing the mind to relinquish. This is the doorway into this ending, this cooling. And I think that that's when we think of the definitions of Nibbana, that sense of extinguishing, ending, cessation, those are all, but it's an ending of something. It's not a because yeah, it's an ending of dukkha, it's an ending of greed, hatred, delusion, as opposed to an annihilation of being. It is an ending of that which afflicts us, and that makes the this makes this something worthy of focusing our attention and our practice. And of course, it is approached through the cultivation of our practice. You can't think yourself into Nibbana. You've got to keep practicing and developing the qualities of heart that create a stability and solidity of being within oneself, so that the cultivation of these wholesome and virtuous qualities of dana, of generosity, of sharing, of giving. Being able to just not be caught up in any kind of selfishness, the commitment to virtue, to integrity, to sila, is it provides a ground of being that is solid, and to be dedicated to the cultivation of mindfulness and investigation of the development of the, say, these paths of samatha vipassana, of tranquility and insight meditations, that we're willing to explore how to bring the mind to a place of peace and stillness, and to reflect and investigate on our experience, so that we're able to understand the nature of our experience. So the sense of Nibbana being a something is really, just sort of, in the sense that this is, it's not just to be dismissed or looked over. Oh, it's a nothing. It's incredibly important, as a Buddhist, to realize that you have the possibility of experience. And this is something that the Buddha and the great teachers, don't not really making a distinction between monastics or lay people, or young or old, or race or creed, and saying this is a truth that can be experienced by anyone who is willing to put their attention and effort towards it. And there's, and it's really something to, if there was, and the Buddha sort of says it quite clearly, about if you couldn't, if nobody could realize this, and I wouldn't teach it. But because it's realizable, that is why I teach it. And so teaching this path of practice, teaching this path of the Buddha, is something that is realizable, and we need to be willing to, and of course it does take a refinement of attention. It takes a refinement of analysis, and not being sloppy. And I mean, I can, I mean, I don't have to go very far to know what a sloppy mind looks like. I mean, I can just see myself. And I know that human beings, you just we you know we tangle ourselves up in problems that aren't really substantial, but we believe in them. So that to be able to see, and that is the how do you say, the meaning of vipassana, is like seeing through something. This way, insight is sort of, but literally it's sort of like seeing through the confusions that the mind conjures up, seeing through the distractions that we love to chase after, and to be willing to return to a place of stillness and clarity. This is something, and this is when we think of Nibbana as an extinguishing, it's an extinguishing of that distraction and that confusion, and what's left is a radiant, peaceful heart. I mean, the Buddha did describe these things in terms of, like when there are certain ways that the Buddha talked of Nibbana, and sometimes he described it as as a dhatu, as an element, in the same way that earth, water, fire, air are elements, are dhatus, or space element, consciousness element. These are experienceable realities, and the sense of the Nibbana Dhatu. This is an element that we can experience, can abide in. He called it an ayatana, a sphere. So in the same way that the eye, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind, the objects of the senses, consciousness, those are the 18 dhatu, the 18 ayatana, pardon me, these spheres of experience. So that nibbana is an ayatana. It is a sphere of experience that we can we touch on. And it transforms us if we're willing to recognize it. The Buddha spoke of it as a Dhamma, and just the literal meaning of the word Dhamma is is an experienceable reality. That's what a Dhamma is when in terms of the little d. Big D is the teaching. So a Dhamma is an experienceable reality. So that Nibbana is something that can be experienced. And it's important to recognize that it's not so far away from us that we can't experience it. It's also described as, completely peaceful, highest happiness. Nibbanang paramang sukham. Nibbana is the highest happiness. And it's not happiness of getting fresh pizza or something, but it's more it's happiness of not needing, wanting anything. A complete ability to be fully content within oneself. And so that, when Ajahn Chah described Nibbana, Ajahn Chah's definition of Nibbana is the realizing the reality of non-grasping. And Lumbo Cha was, to me, he's one of the, and of course I'm very biased because I'm his disciple, but to me, he's just got such a way of expressing things that are very tangible and direct, so that sense of the reality of non-grasping, and to be, and we can realize that, and so, but it does require that we are willing to not grasp, not cling, not attach, non-attachment, the reality of non-attachment. So it's this is a way that we can be conceiving of this for encouraging ourselves, but it's I think it's important not to try to define it too tightly, because everything that the Buddha points to is always comes back to this, non-clinging, non-attachment, non-grasping. That we so this is our path. And even when we are cultivating, say, the virtues of generosity and self, that unselfishness and integrity and virtue, It's with a sense of non-grasping, without a not creating a not creating a me or a mine or an I that is trying to be something. And it's just sort of realizing, oh, this is what is truly peaceful. And I think that's where one of the descriptions that always inspires me. The Buddha describing these different qual like the when he's speaking of the goal and speaking of Nibbana, this is peaceful, this is sublime. That is the stilling of all formations, all activities. The relinquishment of all acquisitions, the d destruction of craving, dispassion, nibbana. This is what nibbana is. And that etang santang, etang paridang, yadidang, sambasankara samatha, sambhupadipadinisago, tanhaka yovilako, nibbana. Nibbanati. It's such a beautiful description. You know, this is peaceful. This is sublime. And so to be opening the heart to that simplicity. And I think, but one of the things is, of course, you can, again, you can't think yourself into this. You can't make it. You can't t turn it into a solid entity that you can go and grab onto, but the doorway is through just the contemplation, the cultivation of all these different virtues and skills in a living a wholesome life, cultivation of the meditation and mindfulness and investigations, but the willingness to investigate the impermanent, unsatisfactory, non-self nature of all existence, whether it's external or internal. Whether it's about the world out there or about my internal world or my sense of me and myself, really seeing and investigating from that place of this is impermanent, and this is uncertain, this is changing. And what the Buddha says is that this opens a doorway into a release, what's a vimokkha, a release, that seeing of impermanence over and over again, internalizing the experience of anicca, uncertainty, inconstancy, allows the mind to experience what is called animitta or signless. The mind doesn't go to the creation of the solidifying of things, because that's what our conceptual mind is constantly trying to solidify the world around us and our sense of me, and so that being able to give that some space and let it go. Allowing the heart to delight in the signless release from the habit of conceiving. The other aspect of the contemplation of dukkha, of unsatisfactoriness, in all of its various manners, what the Buddha is, the release that is experienced through that contemplation and understand penetration of the unsatisfactory nature of things is what the Buddha calls a desireless release, the apanahita vimokkha. This is the in the sense that the kind of craving and desire program that keeps us chasing after the next thing, whether we, following our likes and our dislikes, following the pull toward pleasure and the fear of pain, the desire settles. It cools. That is what Nibbana is. It cools it. And because that, desire stirs the mind up, and to allow it to cool is so important. And then the contemplation of not self, the release that one experiences, a release of emptiness, sunyata vimokkha. So, and it's not the emptiness of nothing, it's the emptiness of not having to be something. It's this incredible peace and spaciousness that one can experience. And I think, of course, that the words that the Buddha uses, the Nibbana, as a quenching, a cooling, extinguishing, ceasing. Those are really important qualities to contemplate, because it's like such a relief to allow desire and attachment to just be quenched. There's no need to be seeking anything else. One is actually satisfied. And this is the experience of that is not a nothing. This is something that's really important, because it's sort of, well, if I give everything up, then I won't be anything, and I won't experience. It's not. It's the experience is one of tremendous happiness. Why the Buddha said Nibbana is the highest happiness, Nibbana Paramang Sukham. And there's a great exchange, I think it's we're in the Chula Dukkha Kanda Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya. I can't remember what number, 18 or 19 or something, I can't remember. But anyway, the Buddha is in conversation with religious seekers of the time, and they're kind of skeptical and critical of him, and extolling their own practice. And the Buddha sort of said, no, I mean, that's basically this is a path of happiness, and who would experience more happiness, me or King Bimbisara, the king of the land? He was probably somewhere around Rajagaha in Magadha. So he used the king, and he was the most powerful king of that region. And who's going to experience more happiness? The king of Magadha or me? The king's got access to every avenue of gratification. He's got all sorts of wealth. He's got all sorts of possessions. He's got all sorts of palaces. He's got all sorts of avenues of gratification on the sensual realm. Who's going to be happier? King Bimbisara or me? And the Buddha is sort of, and it's me. The king can't compare. King is going to be, he's restless, he's fearful, He can't sustain. And can King Bimbisara sit for 7 days and seven nights and experience unremitting bliss? And of course, no. Well, I can. And this is the experience of freedom from suffering is an experience of the access to what is truly. I mean, one is truly peaceful, but it's also truly an experience of well-being and happiness. And of course, it's not the excitement of getting what you want. It's not the excitement of gratification, but it is happiness. And most people don't actually know what it's like to be truly happy. And so that this word nibbana confuses people. So to be able to start thinking in terms of what's the Buddha pointing to? Because the Buddha is pointing to something that is beyond the ordinary, and it is accessible, but to for any wise person. For themselves can experience it. So anyway, those are some thoughts this afternoon on Nibbana. Is it a reality or just a lofty goal that people proliferate about?
अन्दमयम् ओवरगथा साधुकरं कथमसि साधु 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 अनुमोदामि
Thank you so much, Longpo. It is a lot clearer, and it's also a subject, a topic that's not widely discussed. It makes many of practitioners grapple with it being really a far-reaching kind of aspiration and give up totally.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons why I also thought, well, it's always good to talk about because, yeah, it doesn't, it doesn't get much airtime.
Not
So,
enough.
and it really is important because it is the possibility for anybody who has faith in the Buddha's teaching that this is something that can be realized.
Yes, and we're very grateful that you're here with us to discuss the very important topic. There is a question here from Dr. S.T. Lee. Dr. S.T. Lee, I think, may I invite you to ask your question, please, doctor?
Peter, I would rather that the question be posed to Lhapo Pasana and
Yeah, it would be helpful if you can explain your question.
All right.
Yes, please do.
Longpo Pasano, it's been wonderful listening to you this morning. It's 7 a.m. in Singapore time. Sure what your time is, but it's 7 a.m. here.
We're 5 o'clock in the afternoon here.
5 o'clock, okay. And it's wonderful hearing you trying to verbalize Nibbana, the state of Nibbana. And I like what you said in response to a question from the Sangha, to say that Nibbana is not like anything. I think that almost answers it all. And I think that For the rest of your talk, you were actually concentrating on the practice, which I think is what should consume all of us, is the practice, and not to think too much about Nibbana. But in my question that I posed to you, I wanted, in the like of this, why don't we concentrate not so much on personal liberation, as it were, but to think more about our practice. And I posed the question about thinking of others, and that's a bodhisattva ideal, and just wanted your thoughts on this. In other words, consume ourselves with thoughts of thinking of others all the time rather than achievement or personal liberation. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think the thing is there is no, on a certain level, you've got to be thinking of, you know, even thinking of yourself as isolating, thinking of others is proliferating. So it's just paying attention to, I think that's what exactly why the Buddha, the central piece of the Buddha's teaching is about suffering, and it is an experience rather than a conceptualization. And we conceive of ourselves, we conceive of others, and that is basically all of proliferation. If we're able to step back from that kind of conceiving and proliferation, we will be able to respond both to our own difficulties and problems, as well as a skillful response to the world around us, because we're not getting in the way. And, you know, I think of somebody like Ajahn Chah. I mean, it's amazing how he's been able to reach so many people, because he was actually asked one time, you know, say about doing one's own practice or you know, taking on the practices of bodhisattva training, and Ajahn Chah was sort of like, don't be an arahant, don't be a bodhisattva, don't be anything at all. As long as you're anything of anybody, you are going to suffer. And as long as you're suffering, then you're going to be sharing that out with everybody else as well. So I think this practice is so it is important to focus on the training, on the practice, because it's just the giving oneself to the training that the Buddha laid down that opens the doors. Yeah, basically opening the doors to the deathless, opening the doors to liberation and freedom is, and you know, where the problem is, we keep getting in the way.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lampa. I'd like to invite people here in this room, if you have any questions, if you'd like to comment or ask a question or clarify on the theme of Nibbana, please feel free to click on the raise hand button and interact with Lompa Pasano here.
Could be on any theme. I'm not whatever sort of pops into people's minds, they're welcome to ask.
Well, we're waiting for people to put up their hand. Lomford has another question here. The question here is the practice of jhana necessary for attaining nibbana?
Of course it is. But the problem is the way that people tie themselves up in knots about defining and becoming somebody who is a jhana attainer. So it's more of the, I mean, jhana is basically a settled mind, a settled heart. And realizing freedom is not possible without a settled heart. The being able to come to the Buddha's teaching and the practice from a place of clarity and stillness is essential. The problem is how we start getting caught up in the desire to be somebody who possesses jhana, and we get really, really greedy. So I think again, it's sort of in the same way that rather than talking too much about nibbana, pay attention to the practice. Don't talk a whole lot about jhana. Talk about what are you doing to settle the heart, still the mind? What are you doing to let go of greed, hatred, delusion? What are you doing to let go of the five, particularly the five hindrances? In the end, it's all about letting go.
Thank you, Lopong. Anyone who's got question? Clarification? A chance to interact with Lopong here. Vibhun.
Putting him on the spot there.
Yeah. There is a lady here, Kun Tanatapo.
Janka, I have a question. So when the mind reached that state of emptiness, stillness, how to contemplate on it?
Well, I mean, part of it is recognizing what is it that pops up into that, because one, of course, one experiences it from time to time, but then to how does one, what comes up that within that emptiness and stillness that breaks it or shatters it, and then because that. When the mind is clear, then you start seeing, oh, well, there's this underlying tendency to be worried or to feel I'm missing something or whatever. So that it's this opportunity for highlighting what can I let go of now? What and so rather than say desperately trying to hold on to the empty, clear mind, you're using that empty, clear mind to highlight and recognize what is starting to trying to fill that space, what is shattering it. And then we can be understanding the those problematic nature of the mind more clearly, as well as appreciating the stillness. Actually, like sometimes also paying attention to a certain delight in that stillness. I mean, it's okay to actually enjoy being peaceful. No. Rather than again trying too hard, you actually just really really enjoy the oh wow, okay, this is I like that just that quote again. Oh, this is peaceful, this is sublime. Oh, isn't that delightful?
Thank you. There is another question here in the chat box, Longpo. I will read it out to you.
Okay.
Okay, this question is from Maria. Dear Ajahn Pasano, maybe for most practitioners, it is possible to understand a little bit about Nibbana in a momentary sense. But to become permanently freed from defilements is more difficult. Even if the Buddha had to come out of it after 7 days and seven nights. So the question is, let me read it out again. Dear Ajahn Pasano, maybe for most practitioners, it is possible to understand a little bit about Nibbana in a momentary sense. But to become permanently freed from defilements is more difficult to understand. If even the Buddha had to come out of it after 7 days and seven nights, please explain. Thank you.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is not this is not an easy path, and it is quite refined. And I mean, it's you think of the Buddha, having dedicated, I mean, one being born with incredible bārami, then. Dedicating himself to seeking and practicing, seeking out teachers, practicing incredibly diligently in order to realize Nibbana. And then when he did experience it, his first impulse is, this is too difficult to try to teach anybody. And that was what that say the invitation to for me to begin the Dhamma teaching was the this from the story of the Buddha and the Brahma Sahampati seeing the Buddha disinclined to teach and inviting the Buddha. There are beings with little dust in their eyes who and so then the Buddha did determine to teach. And of course, he was to our benefit. I mean, he taught for 45 years and laid down a complete path that would allow us to experience the this opportunity of freedom from suffering. But is it easy? No. Is it something that you can so it's something that even if it is a refined aspiration. It's a it, there isn't anything more worthy to aspire to, so that it's something to be working towards, and to giving oneself to as an opportunity. I mean, it's easy to give oneself to, okay, I'll just muddle along and suffer for the rest of my life. I mean, that's pretty pathetic. It's so, but to sort of, oh, I have this opportunity to chip away at greed, hatred, and delusion with the possibility of experiencing freedom. And as she says, yeah, we can experience it on a You get a like a flavor or a taste, and that encourages us to keep at it and realize, oh, there is a this is real. This is something to be done.
We have Sister Evie, Sally Evie. Are you there? Yes, thank you.
Ajahn, thank you for today's talk. I'm just gonna ask a little bit again about Nibbana, because it's a very difficult concept to understand. And what I experienced from the people who do group meditation in the hermitage, they associate this with something so-called non-feeling, including like piti or sukha. So it's like kind of like a neutral state. For them, it's easy to understand, like, okay, I should meditate if I'm like have anxiety or if I have this agitation. But if I'm experiencing piti and sukha, this is like it's kind of like a pleasant state. So why should I meditate to ultimately attain this ultimate goal of nibbana, when nibbana is sort of like a state of non-feeling, including piti and sukha? Thank you.
Yeah, no, I mean that's not an uncommon, I would say, misunderstanding. So that, yeah, it's and yeah. So why would you be motivated if there's nothing there? So it's which is one of the reasons why tried to come at from different angles, of so this no, this is something that is really important to realize as a desirable goal, and worth whatever effort we can put in towards it, rather than it's a cessation of all feeling, in the sense that one doesn't experience anything. It's a complete annihilation. It's something that the Buddha is, again, the middle way was a middle way of practice, but it was also a middle way of view, so that it was between sort of being and non-being, and so that sense of there's a balanced view that's a. Because that like okay, there's nothing is an extreme, but then to say it's a something is extreme as well. So it's a problem of even during the time of the Buddha, he had a hard time to express it in a way that was universally accepted. And it's why there's many different expressions that the Buddha gave, because he's trying to convey a worthwhile, worthy goal to be putting one's attention and effort towards. One more question.
Yes, thank you, Aya. One more question. The question here is, Longpo, are there examples in real life that we can witness someone who has attained Nibbana?
Well, I mean that's subjective, in the sense of if I can say, well, I mean, there are beings who have experienced it, but then, the problem is, why wouldn't you doubt it? Why believe me? So it's I think it's this is why the Buddha put so much more emphasis on the practice rather than belief. and why the Buddha used Four Noble Truths as an incredibly skillful means for people to put their attention towards, rather than, I mean, you think of the Buddha's, the story of the Buddha, and the Buddha has awakened under the, he's fully enlightened under the Bodhi tree. He decides he should teach, and who should he teach? Well, he should teach the five, his five ascetic friends. They're off in Benares, which is about 200 kilometers away. And so he starts walking towards Benares to be able to teach them. He's met by a wandering ascetic, Upaka. And Upaka is really impressed. He said, "Oh, your face is clear and bright. Your features are serene and inspiring. Who's your teacher? What have you realized?" And the Buddha says, "He just made this incredible declaration. I have no teacher. I am fully awakened. I am the only one in the world who's fully awakened, who is beyond death. I'm going to Benares to beat the drum of the deathless." And Upaka is sort of, "Oh, may it be so," and bailed really quickly, walked in the opposite direction as quick as he could. Making a declaration of truth that even if it's true, there's no handle to get on because you have to believe it. So then the Buddha said, "Well, I've got to lay out a path." And just saying something like that is not useful. So that paying attention to the path, the training that the Buddha has given us is the doorway in, and you get to experience that for yourself. You don't have to believe it. I can say, okay, I mean, I've met teachers who I feel were fully awakened, but that's just me. That's hearsay.
Thank you so much for the gentle reminder, Longfo. That's all the time that we have for today, and we've taken up a lot of your precious evening. It is very nice for us now if we could invite Longfo to guide us to close the session by performing two chants. One is the Buddha's words on loving kindness, and then the verses on sharing and aspiration, Longfo.
Okay,
thank you.
So we can begin with the chant on loving kindness. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another, nor despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent, or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all grief and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nibbana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble guide. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
Thank you. We shall now close the session by chanting the Araha. Brothers from San Juan lead us to take leave from Lompo.
Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādin. Savakkhāto bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namassāmi. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Sangham Namam. 3 bows to Longpo together, bow.
Okay. Anumodana, everyone.
Sadhu Longpo. Have a wonderful rest in the Vasa.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, see you.
Just again, just to express my wonder, amazement, blessings on your putting this program into place and getting all these different teachers giving teachings. So sadhu.
By the grace and generosity of all the Sangha who supported us, we're really very grateful that you're journeying with us. We'll keep well in the Dharma stream, and until we see you again, we'll become stronger until we realize Nibbana, Lompo.
Okay, may it be so.
May it be so. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.